Hello and welcome to the Classic Car Weekly podcast, the sibling podcast of the popular weekly title. I'm this week's host, Jesse Billington, and I am joined once again by the editor, David Simister. How are you?
I'm good, yeah. Enjoying the run-up to the NEC this week and still buzzing from a very busy veteran car run.
Yeah, it's sort of one of the busiest of 2 weeks of any possible month for the Classic Car Weekly as we go from one big event to the next. And I think those two are largely what we're going to be talking about today on the podcast as well. Before we dive into it, we'll do as we usually do, a quick sort of our classics check-in. Any progress on the front from you, or is it same old, same old?
Pretty quiet on the Western front for both my cars, actually. I've been primarily going back and forth on trains recently. So obviously I went a very long train journey down via London, then to Brighton. Then I'm back on the Avanti's finest down to Birmingham International this week for the NEC. So, but it does mean that I don't have to sit in my cars on the M6, so which is not a bad thing.
Not a bad thing at all. And yeah, much the same for me, really, because I caught the train down to London for the weekend. And I do have a need to reinstall the centre console of the MG ahead of driving up to the NEC. So that might be a task for this evening. Thankfully, it's only 4 screws just to push the unit back in and hold it to the bulkhead, as I've been trying to rewire and wire in a new radio that to do over the one that's been sat there, or the remains of one that have been sat there since I bought the car, and have been badly wired in so that they constantly drain the car.
My top tip, definitely, if you're thinking about going to the NEC this weekend, do consider going by train, because you save yourself £16.50 on the parking.
Yeah, that's probably one of our hot tips, is if you're considering it. Also, if you are considering driving, consider parking at the train station or the airport even, because the airport
definitely
is a hell of a lot cheaper to park at, and then you can just hop on the train over. But we'll get to the NEC in due course with our classics out of the way. Obviously, I have to pay for parking for mine. My car will be parked inside one of the halls, conveniently. Anyway, back to what we're going to talk about, the London Brighton Veteran Car Run. We've already alluded to it, and I have just about dried out from it. Did you manage to stay dry on the Sunday?
I did, yeah. It was actually a pleasant surprise this year's Veteran Car Run. I had my waterproof trousers were on, ready to go. I was ready for another deluge, because I've been drenched in on a couple of previous runs. Actually, the climax at Madeira Drive in Brighton was actually lovely and sunny for a change. I know that the start where you were in London was a different story, but you've had the real excitement this year, because you've actually been passengering, hitching a ride and helping out in one of the cars that actually took part.
Yes, yeah, the start, well, I left my hotel at about 5:30, ready for sort of a nice gentle walk around the corner to Hyde Park, and I thought, oh, it's not raining at the moment, we might be lucky, touch wood, sort of a tap on the side of the head, and I've got my raincoat tucked under the flap of my rucksack, and I've got my waterproof trousers tucked in, should I need them, and as I'm sort of wandering along, getting to Hyde Park, drizzle starts, and I think, I don't think this is going to pass, so the anorak goes on, and I'm thinking, maybe it might just stay light enough, I won't put the waterproof trousers on just yet, which was probably my worst decision of the day, because it meant that, there's this great build-up to the Veteran Car Run when you're at the start, and then all of a sudden, it just starts. And by that point, it was a bit late to put the waterproof trousers on, and by the time we got to Croydon, I was soaked. Top half of me, perfectly fine. The Berghaus jacket did a great trick at keeping me dry, but my legs were very damp and cold. But it was good fun passenger riding in a 1903 Clement, owned by Paul Gould, an American car collector who has a fantastic collection, has done the run a couple of times himself and keeps a few veteran cars for the purpose. And yeah, really enjoyable run. There was a good team of us of experienced sort of veteran car runners, drivers, people who've done it before. And turns out I was able to lean on my old Duke of Edinburgh experience for navigating as well, as somewhere around, I can't think, must have been somewhere in South London, we got lost, essentially. We missed a turning that we should have taken for one of the checkpoints, and only noticed when we arrived at a major roundabout and another veteran car pulled up alongside us and went, "Where are we?" And we went, "We don't know, we've guessed for the last two junctions." So it was a quick sort of flick through the Tulip book to try and find sort of roughly where we think we are, what the nearest identifiable landmark is, and then can we just sort of Apple Maps navigate our way to that, which did get us out of a sticky situation. And at that point, I was simply left with the Tulip book to sort of direct, like Rommel in the desert, sort of the back seat, just sort of going left turn here, right turn for this one, and navigating that way, which worked out quite nicely in the end. And we bumped into a very cold and wet Nick Mason from Pink Floyd at a petrol station as we all filled up with petrol and hot coffee before making it to the halfway point.
Yeah, certainly the veteran car run has an atmosphere quite unlike any other, and yeah, it's always amazing the crowd, not only the crowds that come out to see. I mean, certainly my recollection of doing the last time I did the run was that pretty much the entire way there were people sort of out there with their classic cars, or having barbecues by the side of the road, or like having breakfast in the beer gardens and stuff. Just kind of cheering these cars on, which is just—it's a wonderful showcase of this very early American heritage. And the other thing, actually, is the with the people taking part in the run as well. Actually, I think sometimes if you're not very familiar with the run, it's very easy to assume it's all sort of very Mr. Toad-esque characters sort of bumbling about in their old veteran cars. But actually, the people who take part, I mean, there's loads of young people taking part as well. They've had these cars passed down, that with the apprentices from the British Motor Museum taking part in the Thornycroft this year, with Alex Brundle, who was on his first run in the the Wolseley Flatourette. So a really varied sort of cast of people in cars, and all having fun and keeping these really interesting old cars on their own. I think probably my favourite moment from the run this year was that the very first vehicle to arrive at Madeira Drive was a 1900 Renault tricycle. And it could have, I could hear it going pop 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 as it chunted along Madeira Drive, and it got there absolutely spot on to the finish line, but then it wouldn't move again once it finished. So the commentator for the run actually had to get behind him and bump start him off the line to get him into that paddock at the very end of the run.
That sounds about right for the sort of veteran cars, and I think you're right in saying that it's as much as people attend for the cars and to see the history, it is the people that really make the event, and like all the people that sort of take part in it. It is a very cheery, upbeat sort of environment, and it was great sort of seeing. This is my first time actually sort of taking part in the run as not a media or a spectator. So it was sort of great to see how many people Paul knew and sort of all the other runners that have all done it before, and the camaraderie between them all sort of chatting. How's the car going? Did it start up all right this morning? You're looking forward to the run. Do you think you'll make it down? What problems have you encountered? What have you done with the car since I last saw you? Sometimes these people only see each other sort of once a year or so for this major event, and it's great seeing this sort of society just sort of appear out of nowhere in the dawn light in Hyde Park and grows from there. And it's one of those things that you just sort of go, this is the fantastic part of classic car sort of culture, is the way that it sort of has this community that pops up around it. And yeah, it was lovely to take part in, and again the spectatorship of it was phenomenal, especially once it had stopped raining. Once we left Crawley, the halfway point, pretty much the entire way it was like being part of sort of a Tour de France sort of pentathlon, what's the phrase, peloton, where you're just surrounded by people all the time, sort of waving on, cheering you on, pointing, taking photographs. There are car clubs that have sort of set up at the side of the road. I think we definitely saw the Panhard Lavazza car club that was set up, because of course you've still got Panhard's run in the run, so it's sort of supporting the mark. And yeah, just the entire way through, it's just beguiling seeing sort of all these people sort of waving flags, cheering, having their breakfast, in some cases having a pint as well. It's like it's at 10 o'clock in the morning. I don't quite know where you've got that from, but I'm also quite envious, because by that point the sun was beating down. It was actually quite pleasantly warm as we were drying out in the breeze. So it was, yeah, it was a really enjoyable experience. And this is the thing that I'll say to anyone who gets the opportunity to take part in it, a passenger run in it, ride with a friend who's got a veteran car, take the opportunity, give it a go, because it is phenomenal. It is a very much a once in a lifetime experience, and also one that if the chance comes around again, you will almost certainly jump at, because it's captivating in a way that's so hard to explain.
Yeah, I was going to say, and would you like to hear my behind the scenes, slightly hair raising experience from this year's run? I wasn't in a car, but I still had some fun at Madeira Drive.
Oh God, what was your hair raising moment then?
Well, it was, I mean, just to get again a slightly different shot, the very nice people at Brighton Zip Wire let me go up there, up to the top of the Zip Wire Tower to get shots. Obviously, I had a helmet on and a safety rope and so on, but he said, yes, go up there. Obviously, you don't go on the Zip Wire itself, of course. But I was there with my camera, and do you know what? It's when you're 100 and whatever feet up in the air, it's jolly windy when you go up to the top, and I could just feel this Zip Wire Tower sway in the wind as I was there trying to get the shots and stuff, and I thought, yeah, anyway. So I'm not sure I like heights anymore.
Commendable, I will say, the lengths you go to get the shot for Classic Car Weekly. I think that's the important thing. It's important the readers know that you put yourself in peril for the production of these spreads.
Yeah, I
Did
think
you?
that next year I think I'll have to actually do the zip wire and then get stuck halfway down Boris Johnson style, you know, just wave to the veteran cars as they come past. That'd be a scene for next year's one, I'm sure.
Say, get a lovely panning shot as you go down the zip line, sort of a lovely shot staying with one of the cars. And like, that would be something incredible
And the
indeed.
editor on a zip wire outrun a veteran car. That can be next year's story.
Like a terrible Top Gear style challenge. What's faster, 3.5 horsepower or gravity in one editor? But it was a brilliant run, and I'm glad I did. I'm glad we had the mixture of conditions as well, because I think had it been sort of just sunny and dry, it would have been nice to have done the run, don't get me wrong, but I think the rain added that bit of a challenge to it. It made it this sort of obstacle to overcome and sort of push through. And I was, really quite happy that it sort of came out the way it did. And I think hopefully it reflects in the stories we've put together, the coverage we've got, and sort of the lovely photographs that have come together for it. There's the brilliant shot you took of myself and the team with the car on in the paddock afterwards, as well as sort of as we come down towards the finish line. And you can see in some of the images just how packed the crowds are around it, supporting it and sort of cheering on an event that has very little relation to the sort of, in context, more modern classics that we sort of more often enjoy in Classic Car Weekly, or even the cars we drive on the roads today. We're talking about something that's well over 100 years old. These cars have so little bearing on modern life, but they're still hugely enjoyed, and it's great to see.
Absolutely. I mean, that's obviously a full report in the current issue of Classic Car Weekly on sale now. And then the big thing now is obviously the preparation for the other big show that happens in November, which is the Lancaster Insurance Classic Motor Show, which happens this weekend.
Yeah, we've got two features essentially in the issue that is out today that are looking forward to the event. We've got essentially a sort of 21 things to look forward to at the event, as well as a lovely compilation of all of the best buys that we know are going to be there in that absolutely enormous iconic auctioneer's sale. So we'll start with sort of the top 21 things, and this is one that I sort of put together. I sort of did a bit of digging around to try and sort of find the news stories of what's coming along, the people that are going to be there. And there are some fantastic bits and pieces to look forward to. I'm especially looking forward to just the amount of club stands that we've got this year. We've got 16 new ones turning up as well, which is going to bring a great sort of breadth of things along. I'm particularly intrigued by the Post Office Vehicle Club, having worked for the Post Office Royal Mail for a while. I'm interested in that one. That looks to be an absolutely fantastic offering. But I think more importantly for Classic Car Weekly, we have a stand as well.
We certainly do, yeah, and really looking forward to the car that's going to be the star of our stand is Scott with his MGB GT, which again that's a hell of a recovery for him. We reported earlier in the year that his MGB GT, which he spent 2 years restoring, ended up under several feet of water outside where he lived in Stockport in Greater Manchester. That would be an absolutely heart-breaking, discovery thing to wake up to for anybody who's an enthusiast, but thanks to his own sort of perseverance and help from the classic car community, he's managed to get the car back up and running, and it's going to be on our stand in Hall 4 this weekend, and we're going to be doing a bit of an interview with him as well to try and find out the story behind the car, which is this weekend, Friday and Saturday.
Yes, yeah, live interviews with Scott on the Friday and the Saturday on stand. We're 615 off the top of my head at Hall 4. So yeah, head along to that. And I've been sort of staying in touch with Scott across the build process following it. And yeah, like you said, the community that's rallied around to support the rebuild and sort of resurrection of this car has been phenomenal. So I'll be really sort of tapping into that and sort of seeing not just how he came to have the car in the first place, but also sort of what it's been like physically and emotionally, sort of going through that major hurdle. Also, when it comes to classic car weekly cars, my MG will be there. Now, also another car that's sort of been a bit resurrected over the years. That's going to be on the Midget and Sprite Club stand. I haven't checked where that is yet, so I should probably do that. It does have an engine now. It does run and drive. It will be driving itself to the NEC as well.
Excellent.
Which makes a change from when it was last there without an engine. It had to get trailered to it. But of course, there's more when it comes to Classic Car Weekly content. We've obviously got the podcast cafe. We'll be live at, off the top of my head, it's 2 o'clock.
2 o'clock on Friday. So the follow-up, so then say the next episode of this very podcast, you guys will be able to join us in the podcast lounge at the NEC this coming Friday. We'll be joined with the two of us and James Sadlier, our senior contributor, will be there chatting classics and some of the highlights from this year's show. So if you're at the NEC Classic Motor Show on Friday, come over and join us. It'll be great, great to see you and find out what you think of this year's show.
Yeah, it's going to be a great chance to sort of get in touch with some of the listeners and sort of have a slightly different podcast as we usually do. In fact, it's going to be a very busy few days for me as sort of the digital sort of coordinator side of things. So obviously we've got this podcast, the one live at the NEC, and hopefully we'll have a preview video as we often do when David and I like to sort of potter around the halls as everything is being set up and really sort of lifting the lid on a bit of the magic that
you'll
goes
be there with our mandatory, if you're a little bit of a background secret, if you're there at the setup day of the NEC, which is Thursday, which everyone building the stand, obviously they don't want anything falling on you, so you have to wear a high-vis jacket by law of the NEC. So obviously Jesse and I will be doing our best Bob the Builder impressions on Thursday night if we're doing a preview video, and hopefully we'll be able to give you guys a bit of an inside look into a bit of a sneak preview as to what's happening at this year's show.
Yeah, famously, you cannot be run over if you're wearing a high visibility jacket.
But of course.
So there'll be plenty more from Classic Car Weekly in the build up to the show. And obviously at the show itself, there is a lot to look forward to. Over 310 clubs. There is the Hall of Fame, which is returning. A couple of famous faces. We know that Richard Hammond is going to be there on the Friday. Mike Brewer is going to be there across the weekend. There's, as we're going to get to in a minute, the Iconic Auctioneers, a new stand for modified cars. Sporting Bears are going to be in attendance. There is 450 plus trade stands there as well. So if you've got a winter project that's on the cards, great chance to pick up some tools and parts from that one, as well as just the variety of club showcases, the competitions such as the Pride of Ownership, which is celebrating 10 years this year, I think I'm correct in saying.
Yeah, that's it. And again, there's going to be 7 halls full of classic cars. So this is one of the biggest celebrations of particularly car clubs anywhere in the world. It's a massive event. More than 3,000 vehicles are going to be on show. So my top tip to anybody is bring your comfy shoes because there's a lot to check out.
Oh, you're going to be covering some distance and comfy shoes and maybe a little bit of spending money, especially if you're going to have a look in at the Iconic Auctioneers auction. And David, you've put together a brilliant sort of preview of the hottest buys this weekend. And there are some brilliant choices in here and some very inspired ones as well when it comes to sort of modern classics, left field choices, such as the Escort GL, which is a prime choice for a photo coming up, as well as a few sort of performance oriented ones. What sort of led you to the decisions you've made here, and which one for you stands out? If you were given the dregs of Classic Car Weekly's budget at the end of the year and told go wild at the auction, what are you buying?
Well, I think there's quite a few things that are really significant cars that obviously there's a bit of something for everyone, and I think the 10 cars that I've talked about, it's about what they say about today's classic car market. There's a lot of chatter about the market's all depressed and people aren't going out and buying cars. I mean, that's prices are in general a little bit softer than they were 2 or 3 years ago, but the idea that the market is in a bad place, it could not be further from the truth, and actually all of these cars of potentials do really, really well. I think the ones that strike me as being really interesting, I'd be very interested, there's a Jaguar XJ prototype. It's not an XJ12 technically, it was built as an XJ6 and then they put the V12 in later on as a test bed, completely unrestored. It's been off the road for many, many years. I'd be fascinated to see what that actually goes for, because it's a wonderful piece of Jaguar history that really needs to be saved. And the other one, which if I had a bit of budgets towards the end of the year. Perhaps, you know, the Vauxhall Chevette HS is a really interesting car because there's been a lot of talk about Ford Escort RS 1800, the very first one off the line, which has been given a really high six-figure estimate. It's yeah, that's going to be one of the most, you know, talked about cars, I think, of the entire sale. But actually, there's a Vauxhall Chevette HS, which is also the first example off the line. It's kind of the Griffin equivalent of that car, if you will. And the estimate is 33 to 36K. So actually, it just shows you how much more the market hankers after fast Fords as opposed to performance Vauxhalls. And you know, if anything, that Chevette HS is an absolutely belting 70s performance car. I would love to have that in my garage, and I really hope that you know, it actually does more than it's estimated for, because it's a really, really fascinating piece of history.
Yeah, sort of the direct rival in period, and it's interesting to see how sort of one's gone on to absolute stardom on the classic car scene, and one has always flown a little bit under the radar, certainly when it comes to fetching those big numbers at auction with the Chevette.
Yeah.
But that'll be an interesting tide mark. In a similar aspect, I think the 2000 Discovery that you've got there is going to be a really interesting one as well, because this is sort of a unique spec. Is it a SG5?
Yeah,
And
it's interesting. It's interesting what's been happening with Land Rover Discoveries over the past year, because there are still a lot of early Discoveries knocking around, and you've probably seen them sort of, you know, with big, you know, they've all been jacked up. They've got oversized, very chunky tires. They've had their diesel engines tuned, and obviously they've got snorkels on the side, that kind of thing. Lots of those knocking around. But actually, when you look at what's been selling over the past 18 months or so, very early Series 1 and Series 2 Discoveries, and they have to be VAs in good condition with low mileages, they're actually doing really well at auction. It's fascinating, because I thought that the kind of the, you know, a lot of the Land Rover market were very much geared towards things like two-door Range Rovers and Defenders. But actually, if you'd said to me 5 or 6 years ago people would be paying these really big prices for Discoveries, I would have probably giggled at the suggestion. But no, they really seem to have taken off in the past year or so.
Yeah, it's an interesting trend, and I have a bit of a soft spot for the Discovery. I like the old series Land Rovers, I like the Defenders, but the Disco, it was such an interesting concept when it launched at the time, and I think it's really finding its heart as a classic car now as well. But the one that really stands out to me is the 58 MGA Twin Cam. I'm a sucker for an MG sports car, as is fairly obvious, and an Abingdon Demonstrator Twin Cam is something a little bit special indeed. So I think that might stretch beyond its 30 to 40,000 pound estimate. That's the one that I think is.
I'm very fascinated to see as well. I mean, we talked about Nick Mason earlier with his filling up his veteran car, but he's also put in a VW Golf Cabriolet, which needs work, but it's not just any. It's a Pink Floyd edition, owned by Mr. Pink Floyd himself, and it comes with loads of Pink Floyd memorabilia. Yes, it's a ratty Mark III Golf, but it's all going to charity, including Iconic Auctioneers Premium. I reckon that there will be some Pink Floyd fans at the show who will want that as a bit of rock history, and they could well, you know, pay some very good money for that car to see it back on the road again.
As we say, that could be a really interesting one to watch, because it could become either an absolute steal or it could go for absolutely silly money, which would be great again for the charity. It's a Harefield Healing Garden charity as well, so a really nice
Yeah,
charity to
it's a
back
very
things.
good cause, and I hope it does well, because again, that's a very worthwhile charity. And but you know, again, it's come with I think that the door card is signed by Nick, and he's got lots of you know, it comes with basically effectively like a boot's worth of signed Pink Floyd memorabilia, which is very cool in itself. So I'm sure that the prog rock generation will treat it accordingly.
Yeah, it's going to be a very interesting one indeed. And of course, I think if we've got a full list of the cars that are coming up for sale
We certainly do,
in
yeah, in
to,
this
yes,
issue.
we get to
Yeah.
our buying and selling section, we've got the full list in there as well. So plenty to look forward to. And of course, like we said, we will be having a poke around the NEC before it opens up. We'll be there on the Thursday. So we'll no doubt have a mooch around Iconic Auctioneers lot and see what else jumps out to us while we're there. So there'll be plenty more to unearth in the coming days. Otherwise, it's another busy issue, actually, when it comes to Classic Car Weekly. We've got plenty to look at, including our special report, which sort of leads our news section, as well as the all-party parliamentary group. Essentially sort of reinstates itself after an 18-month hiatus and brings with it some brilliant news. So plenty to read on that front. And, of course, there's all the usual goodness when it comes to The Way We Were and The Crossword. Otherwise, we've got a big issue to keep plugging away with and plenty of work to do before we disappear to the NEC this weekend. David, do you have any final remarks to chuck in?
No, apart from obviously, you know, do make sure you get yourself down to the Classic Motor Show this weekend. Come over to Hall 4, you know, check out Scott's a fantastic MGB on the stand. Come and chat to me and Jesse and the wider Classic Car Weekly team as well. We'll all be there and really looking forward to it. And we'll have a big special issue all about the show this time next week.
Plenty to discuss at that point in time as well, I am sure. Otherwise, thank you very much for joining me, David, and I shall let you crack on with production of this next issue of Classic Car Weekly.
Should be a good one. Thanks, as always, Jesse.